Hello and welcome to the Beating the Statistics podcast. This is another one of our BTS Health and Fitness group call conversations that we're having. This one happened on November 29th, 2023. I'm with my good friend Diane, who's been an athlete who I've had a great relationship with for a while and have this year started to coach and train. And she's been with me from the beginning. So Diane Morley is great. We're talking about a lot of different continuing things about how to deal with the oncoming onslaught of winter and all that that brings with it, from cold to dark to challenging our favorite activities, how to explore different activities that we might find enjoyable and valuable. Also, we talk a little bit about how to handle emotional things that are happening around the holidays and around different times of the year, about how to process grief and loss and how to hopefully be able to find some joy even in these hard times. So come along with us as we chat about this during this episode of the BTS Health and Fitness group coaching calls. Once again, for those who don't know what these are live calls that we do once every week for those in our BTS Health and Fitness group coaching program. If you'd like to be a part of that program, go ahead and go to my website, beatingthestatistics.com, and you can sign up and register there and be a part of our weekly calls. So anyway, hope you enjoy this. Hope you find some value in it, even if you're not listening to it during the holiday season itself. And we will chat with you later. Enjoy. Okay, welcome to Wednesday, November 29th, a group call here for Beating the Statistics group. Diane's here. She's one of our constants, which is great. Diane has had a busy couple weeks. This is the week after Thanksgiving, which is always a crazy time. And then also, Diane recently had a death in the family and was out in New York for that. And just everything with winter and holidays and family and things that always come up. It's been kind of a wild and crazy week for her, a couple weeks for her, and just like it is for most of us around this time of the year. And kind of along those lines, we're going to continue in our conversation about navigating the holidays and navigating the winter months in a little more detail through a couple of those topical headings. And the two that I really want to focus on today in this continuation is a little bit of an extension of last week. It's discussing the methods of fighting the oncoming winter and the increasing darkness in healthy ways during the holiday season, both physically and mentally and emotionally, as well as how to find methods of improving our emotional and social health during the holidays also. So we're going to go into a couple of those topics, and I'm hoping that Diane has some give and take here that we can chat with and kind of have a discussion around things that have worked or haven't worked, or maybe even some challenges that she's personally dealing with or challenges that I'm dealing with that it's sometimes nice to have a sounding board for. So let's just dive in kind of as an extension of last week. Last week, we talked about ways to be physically prepared for being outside in the dark. We talked about headlamps. We talked about traction devices. We talked about staying warm, and the buffs. I actually took one of those buffs that I was showing and I lent it to my neighbor who we went out to a tree lighting ceremony and we're out with our community here a couple nights ago. And I had one buff around my neck to keep my neck nice and warm. And I had my hat on, but I had another buff just in case I needed a little something extra warm. And it's one of my big fleecy polar fleece ones. And he was freezing and I handed it to him. And now he's got a buff that who knows if my neighbor's ever going to return it. It's one of those, like, you lend a neighbor your saw or your ladder and you never see it again. So we'll see. But if worst case scenario, he has another tool in his toolbox to keep himself warm so he can be active outside, that's a win. So, all right. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about ways to be physically healthy and ways to help us be physically healthy. Number one, this is the biggest one that I think that we can really focus on. And I can't remember if I mentioned it last week or not, but it's about going to sleep on time every night. Now, Diane, how do you do, do does your sleep pattern change as you approach different seasons? When it gets darker outside earlier, or when it's, when it's warmer or more sunny outside, how does your sleep schedule or your sleep patterns change during that time? And do you find yourself more rested or less rested in the wintertime due to that?
It's really funny because it seems like in the summer I actually stay up later, but in the winter, I still feel more tired because it's dark and it feels so like you're always tired, I think.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. So what's happening there is something called your circadian rhythm. And I think I discussed this a couple weeks ago when I had Josh and his son Avery on. We touched on it briefly, but your circadian rhythm is basically something that modulates the hormones that flow through your body, and it does through so through environmental stimuli quite often. It's the things that happen to our bodies and around our bodies that actually produce this rhythm or this drive. And one of the biggest players in that circadian rhythm is sunlight. Now, when you're the whites of your eyes and certain areas of your skin are exposed to direct sunlight, it actually produces hormonal responses that actually make you more alert, more awake, and ready for the day. And then when it gets dark outside, it does the inverse. It actually allows your body to start producing things like melatonin to kind of chill you out and to drop your energy levels down. Now, a lot of people say, "Oh, I need to take melatonin for going to sleep." The reality is that if you surround your body with the appropriate stimuli or lack of stimuli prior to bed, your body will start producing melatonin automatically, which is going to make you sleepy, which is going to help you go to sleep, and then you'll, be asleep. You'll be in bed. You'll be recovering the way that your body needs to. In the wintertime, what that means is that historically, anthropologically, evolutionarily, when the sun goes down, our bodies go, cool, bedtime. Except we're modern humans and we have these things called, electric lights, and we have televisions that emit light and sound, and we have all these things that are constantly stimulating us. LEDs, fluorescent lights, things like that, or sorry, yeah, fluorescent lights. Those are some of the worst offenders of producing these stimulating responses. It actually was less of a problem when we had incandescent lights. The reason why is incandescent lights quite often emitted more of a reddish light, a warmer light than the cool lights that we get from LEDs and from fluorescents. And that cool blue light that hits our eyes, hits the whites of our eyes, will actually reduce our ability to produce melatonin, and it will keep us stimulated and awake for a longer period of time. And so this is actually an increasing problem just in the last 20 years, not necessarily over the last 100 years of electricity, which has already been a problem, but it's gotten even worse with the advent of these different lights and also endless amounts of entertainment that we can stream directly to ourselves. So, that sets us up for a challenge, clearly. There's a couple ways that we can go about this. One, we can be really disciplined. We can say, hey, look, even though it's dark and I'm tired, I'm going to go to bed at, 10 p.m. every night and turn off all my lights. I'm just going to go to bed because that's the time I've always gone to bed. Even in the summer, I went to bed at 10. I felt more rested because the sun didn't really go down until 9 or 9:30. 10 o'clock was fine. That's great. I'm going to stick to the same schedule. That's one way you can go about it, is just by staying disciplined. The other way you can go about it is using winter as a time to rest. Quite often we use winter as, oh, it's been dark for 5 hours. What's staying awake for another 2 hours going to do to me? Probably nothing. So I'm going to go ahead and binge watch some Netflix or from, Disney Plus. That's not great. We could also just go to bed at 8 o'clock instead of 10 o'clock. It's not possible for a lot of us. We have people we live with. We have children. My kids don't go to bed until after 8 o'clock, that's another way we could do it though. Another thing that you can do to help reduce the amount of stimuli is you can start shutting things down as you approach bedtime, right? My approach is typically to stick to the same schedule. So I'm trying to go to sleep around 10 o'clock every single night, sometimes 10:30, rarely after that, but usually it's about 10 o'clock. And what that means is we just say no to extra TV episodes that are going to extend beyond 10 o'clock. That's one way we can do it. Another way that you can do it is they're relatively affordable. They're cheap. Is you can get blue light blocking glasses, which will help a lot. And what you do is they don't look like sunglasses. They look like reading glasses. You just put them on about an hour or two before bedtime, and you just wear them. And what they do is it reduces the amount of blue light that hits the whites of your eyes, which will reduce the amount of stimulation that your brain and your eyes are getting from that blue light, which will then allow your body to increase the production of melatonin. That's going to go a long ways into helping you shut down for the night. Now, you're right, Dan. Winter is hard, and for some reason, even though we get more sleep quite often, we're more tired. And that's because when we wake up in the morning, what's the sun look like outside? It's not there. It's gone. The other side of this melatonin or this circadian rhythm thing is that our bodies are like, yo, why am I awake at 5 in the morning or 6 in the morning? Why are you trying to wake me up to go to the gym? Now, Diane was my sunrise buddy. And throughout the summer, we would go out, we'd go on our runs, we'd go on our walks, and we were in completely different areas of the state of Utah. And yet we'd send each other Marco Polos and we record the sunrise wherever we are. And that's happening at 5:30 in the morning, you know, and it was amazing. And it was easy to get up because we knew that the sun was just, it was starting to brighten the sky a little bit, but the sun hadn't come up yet. Better get out, get on my walk, get on my run so I can see it in all of its glory. And it was exciting and it was very energizing and you weren't tired to get up and do that. But now you get up at 5:30 in the morning, that sun's not up for another 2.5 hours, 2 hours. It's not coming.
I know, it's a problem.
That, unfortunately, there's no good solution for. Either you're going to wake up later so that you are in rhythm with your circadian rhythm, or you're just going to have to be disciplined and say no to the snooze button. Just pop up anyway. Get out there and get your workout in. Get your time in for yourself. There's no good solution for that. Some people will buy some light therapy boxes that can actually stimulate all the circadian rhythm responses. I know some people will use them for seasonal affective disorder or SAD to help improve their hormone profiles and to help correct their circadian rhythms. Those work. Ironically, even though I've been talking a lot about how blue light is what stimulates, red light therapy can actually do a lot to also stimulate certain responses when used first thing in the morning as well, to wake up your body and kind of supercharge your cells. The problem with those are, is they're not usually very affordable. They're not very cheap, and they still require the discipline of you getting your butt out of bed and to wherever your light therapy device is. And that is usually the biggest hurdle, is just getting their feet to hit the ground versus rolling over after hitting snooze. So, okay. So that's sleep. We talked a little bit about different activities that you can do. If you listen back to some of my podcasts in the past, for those of you who are new here, you'll know that I'm a really big advocate of trying a lot of different activities to find what makes your heart sing. Diane has discovered some of hers is walking and hiking. She really enjoys hiking, especially on that Bonneville Shoreline Trail up there in Logan, Utah. Very beautiful place up there. And one of her big goals this year in 2024, so we're going to hike Mount Timpanogos, which is one of the bigger mountains here. It's actually one of the largest massifs that we have in the Wasatch front here. A massif is basically a multi-tiered slab. So not the tallest mountain, but definitely one of the larger, more prominent hillsides there. And it's a really awesome, awesome hike. So if you're going to hike that. Anyway, the other things that you can do in the wintertime is you now are exposed to a whole different slew of activities that you can do that you couldn't do during the summer. Pretty hard to learn how to snowshoe in July in Utah. I'm sure there may be places that you could do it, but you're going to have a challenge. So snowshoeing, cross-country skiing, downhill skiing, even just playing in the snow, making snowmen. Some people find so much joy and fulfillment shoveling driveways. Like, that is one thing that people look forward to, is being able to be of service to their neighbors, to their loved ones, to their friends. And they just can't wait for that snow to fall, and they get out there and they shovel driveways. We just had a conversation with our family. One of the service projects we want to do is we decided that for the month of December, anytime it snows and we wake up in the morning and we don't have school or work that day, the whole family is going to go out and shovel driveways for a couple hours in our neighborhood. That's our goal, is to be of service to our neighborhood to do that. And that's a lot of fun and it's great exercise. So what things have you found, Diane, to maybe change things up a little bit when your whole schedule gets turned upside down because of the seasons changing, getting darker, getting colder? Have you found anything that has helped you in this area?
So today, Sarah and I were talking about it because right now it seems so crazy cold at 18 degrees. And then we were talking about how last winter, when it finally got to be January and it was really cold, like negative five, for some reason it was actually easier because there's something about this transition point where, you know, you just don't have your gear always ready and it's a transition. So basically, I'm not doing very well right now with it, but I do like swimming and I need to get back with that. And I do like walking, but I'm hoping maybe just to go a little later in the day when the sun is out so that it's not just always dark.
Yeah, and you have that flexibility. You know, luckily you're in a position where you don't have, you know, a bunch of kids at home that you have to watch and stuff like that, that you can actually go out once that sun is up to hit that shoreline trail or walking down that. She lives in this beautiful little town that's got a lot of really nice country roads to walk on. And it would be very pretty in the wintertime with all that crisp frost and snow blanketing the fields and freezing that little canal way next to you. So that's great. Yeah. Swimming is awesome too. Some people will reserve the gym only for winter months. Right now I have a gym membership that I will almost for sure be canceling in the spring, but I have it for when I am feeling less than motivated to be outside. Now, that isn't going to happen very often. My thing is that I currently have races scheduled all throughout the winter, which means that I need to basically train in all the conditions to make sure that I am comfortable running in those conditions. The problem with his shoulder season, Diane, what you're talking about is with it being in the teens, it is too cold to wear your fall outfits, and it's just barely too warm to go out and be really exerting yourself in your cold winter outfits too. That's my problem.
That's totally true. I have this gigantic coat, and when I wear that, I'm just right when it's really cold. Mm-hmm. And you're right, it's right in between those coats.
I've been trying to dial in my gear lately. Layers are what I'm finding to be the key. The problem with that is that you're wearing a comical number of clothing items. It's sometimes really silly. Like, what was it? The other day I'm trying to figure out exactly how much clothes I needed to wear to go running up in the mountains. And I had on my compression underwear, my compression long tights, a pair of tights over that, the fleece line tights. And then on top, I was wearing a compression long sleeve shirt, a thermal long sleeve shirt, my regular running shirt, and then my windbreaker shell. And so I have all these things. And of course, it was actually too much. And so I sweat through everything. So now in one run, I have dirtied up like three or four different top and bottom layers of clothing. And so now like my laundry basket is now half full. I'm like, well, that's ridiculous. That's just too much. So today, the last couple of days, I've been experimenting wearing less and it's been working out. I just wear my tights and I wear my a long sleeve compression shirt and then a t-shirt. And it starts out real cold being in the teens, but then within a mile or so you warm up. And this is a motto that I've actually told several people that sometimes I forget, but always dress for the second mile, not for the first mile.
I was actually wondering about that because the same thing with the shoreline trail, it's super cold at first. The wind is blowing in the canyon. And by the time you've gone 15 minutes, you're so hot.
Yeah.
So
there's a balance though, because I'm a Boy Scout and everyone makes fun of me for it. I've gone on backpacking trips where people will look at my 50 or 60 pound pack and be like, that is stupid, the stuff you're bringing. Because I'll bring three or four different ways to start a fire, and I'll bring three different ways to cut wood, and I'll bring an extra, tarp just in case my tent rips or whatever. And people are like, this is silly how much stuff you have. But I'm always way concerned about needing it and not having it than having it and not needing it, right? But there's also a balance, because then it starts to make things really unenjoyable, I was joking to my wife was asking me why I was wearing so many articles of clothing when I know I'm going on a run, I'm going to get sweaty. And I'm like, what happens if I twist my ankle and I'm stuck out there for a couple hours? And she's like, Miles, you're going on a 5 mile run in our neighborhood. Like, just call me. I'm like, okay, you're right. Yeah, that's fine. You're right. I probably wouldn't die freezing to death in the middle of my neighborhood. I'm sure I'd get help, But then the other day I went running with a group of new friends of mine up in the trails. And again, I was unsure about their level of preparedness because they were new to winter trail running. And so I brought an extra emergency bivy sack. Basically it's like an emergency blanket that's reflective that will keep you alive until rescue comes. I brought extra food. I brought extra water. I brought extra stuff. And it was honestly too much stuff again. It was fine. I mean, whatever. I'm just carrying extra weight. But it can honestly, we can overdo it. And so quite often, unless there's a serious safety concern that you're preparing for, going out with a little bit less and finding yourself a little bit uncomfortably cold during these months when you're not moving fast enough or exerting yourself enough is preferable than sweating through everything and then freezing on the tail end because now you're wet, right? Because you've been sweating so much. So if you have no safety concerns that you're worried about, now, if you're going to go on a 20 mile run out in the mountains, or Diane, if you're deciding that you are going to be completely out of cell service and no one is going to be on the Bonneville Shoreline Trail and you're planning on being out there for an hour or two, you might want to over-prepare, right? Because the last thing you want to do is take a spill and twist an ankle and then honestly be in a situation where you can't get back to your car for a couple hours. That can be a scary situation. So you're going to want to over-prepare, make sure you have enough warm clothing that will get you there. But what that solution might look like, though, is that instead of wearing all those layers of clothes, you pack a backpack with a couple extra layers in it that has what you need. And then you just hike with a backpack on, just with a couple extra layers of clothes. And that way you can stay cool. And if something happens, you can layer up then out of the gear out of your backpack and you won't be sweating the whole time. Right. So.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So get out there and do those things. Also, you mentioned the gym. Going swimming. This might be a time for you to join a couple good fitness classes. If anybody has big chain gyms around here, I know we do. We got Vasa down the street that I'm a member of, but there's also Planet Fitness and there's 24 Hour Fitness and all these other gym chains. They almost always have group fitness classes that can be really fun to mix it up. And you can say, hey, look, I'm just going to reserve this type of exercise for these winter cold months where I need a little bit more motivation and something a little bit different to spice things up a little bit, because honestly, I don't want to go running outside when it's cold, or I don't want to go hiking, when it's actively a blizzard outside, which is probably wise. Maybe you still get to the gym though and get a high fitness class in. So, all right. Another thing that I mentioned here that I have a list of, which is a ton of fun, is maybe this is a really good time of year for you to become an expert whole wheat bread baker, or maybe experiment with all the different types of soups and chilies and stews that you've always wanted to, because there's so many good healthy soup recipes out there, or any healthy food really. Kind of just spend some time indoors during these dark months experimenting in the kitchen, because that can actually pay a lot of dividends throughout the remainder of the year if you build a nice book of recipes that you just love that are healthy and fit the lifestyle that you want to live. That can then feed you for the next year. And now you have this cool recipe book of ideas that you can pull from whenever you're wondering what you should make to eat this week, right? So, okay. So that is fighting darkness and the winter in healthy ways. Let's chat about emotional and social health. Diane, I'm going to go on a limb because I think you're like most people, but maybe you're not. You might not be. But I would say that if you're anything like me, the winter can be kind of a sad, depressing place where we want to have more connection to family and neighbors and friends, but sometimes it feels almost harder to make those connections with them during the winter months. Is that something that you resonate with?
Well, the big thing is that I love to garden so much. And so it's almost like being cut off from your, you know, your favorite friend because you can't, it's not a, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Frozen. So, yeah.
That's a hard one. I don't even know.
A lot of sadness, yeah.
Barring any, like, I know some people will, actually, you just dug your whole yard up. That would have been a good time to do it. But make like an underground greenhouse. I don't know if you've seen those where they'll dig below the frost line and then they'll make a greenhouse there. And that way the soil stays unfrozen all year long. And it's a fancy thing that some people do. I saw some plans a couple months ago. I thought, oh, that'd be cool if you were a gardener. I'm not a gardener. I kill almost everything that I try to keep alive. I do have two cactuses that I've managed to keep alive in my office. And a vine that I've been promised by the person who gifted it to me last Christmas at my office that is almost impossible to kill. And so far, that has been a true statement. So I can keep those alive. I don't know if I can grow anything edible, though. That's your territory and your beautiful flowers, too. But yeah, it's really hard when these seasons change because sometimes your hobbies change and that can take an emotional toil. I was actually just talking to Monica today. The question was asked, Miles, why do you like running so much? And I have been thinking about this for weeks, and I actually don't know why I like it so much. I used to think it was an easy answer of like, it just brings me so much joy. And in the summertime, man, that's true. In the summertime, when I'm running up and over mountains and it's just beautiful, I'm feeling the warm sun on my skin. It makes me so happy. But then in the wintertime, I still love it. Even though when I'm actively running, sometimes I'm like, it's all right. I'm running. Whatever. It's good for me. But I think it's honestly the hormone profile that happens afterwards, that runner's high, that dopamine and the endorphins that hit my bloodstream that I'm not even really aware of happening. It's not a conscious joy or a conscious elation that hits me. It's just something that sustains me. Now that's okay for me because I run all year round. I can run in the wintertime. But Diane, like you, if those endorphins that hit, if the thing that gives you joy is gardening, that can be really challenging emotionally for you during the wintertime because now you no longer have that hormone hit of doing something that brings you such inner peace and inner joy. It can be really challenging to kind of find replacements for that. I'm guessing that clicks true for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
One thing for me is I really enjoy camping and going hiking and having hot dog roasts with friends and family during the summer. And that can be difficult during the winter because people don't want to sit outside in the cold, right? Also, my wife was just laying out our calendar this for the next 2 weeks. She's going on a cruise actually with Diane's daughter and one of their mutual friends for Diane's daughter, Sarah, her birthday. And they're going to go out and have a ladies' weekend on a cruise ship out of California, and they're going to have a blast. But she was looking at the calendar when she gets back. And for the next 2.5 weeks, we have something, at least one thing, every single night for the next 2.5 weeks when she gets back. And there's just like our schedules are crazy. It's just banana town. That can make it really hard to connect with people, too, and to find those times of peace and times of serenity to kind of sit and be with yourself or sit and be with others that you care about. So along these veins, I want to encourage people to focus on reaching outside of themselves and trying to find ways that you can connect socially and emotionally with other people. It can be hard. Like I said, schedules can be crazy. The activities that we normally do with these people can be non-existent during the winter. So I propose that winter and And the holidays is a perfect time, if you can find time for it, to bond with people that you maybe have not felt super close to. There's a lot of different things you could do. You could watch a movie together. That's a really easy, accessible thing. It's very relaxing. Who doesn't like watching a movie? Invite family over. We do that quite often. As my kids will say, "Hey, can I invite so and so over?" And I say, "Just tell their whole family to come over, and we'll have pizza, and we'll pop popcorn, and we'll all watch, you know, Elf on, you know, the TV, and just kind of hang out as two families." That's a lot of fun. Not a whole lot of social interaction, but it can still be kind of nice to invite people over and to kind of reach outside yourself. Doing a puzzle with other people, have your friend over and do a puzzle or play games, going for nice walks outside is really nice. Going to the tree lighting ceremony. Like I said, I went and I had my friends there and we got to kind of participate in that little holiday gathering there here in Harriman. It's also can be really, really cathartic during these times for people who have lost loved ones. I believe it was your mother-in-law who recently passed, right, Diane?
Right.
Now, the holidays can be a hard time when people are losing loved ones. And that can be really challenging for a lot of people. I know that my daughter's best friend, she lost her father a couple years ago to cancer, I believe it was. And holidays can be a really hard time for that. Now, recently, we had Dia de los Muertos, which is the Day of the Dead, which happens on November 1st. It's a Mexican holiday. And Emma's best friend, they are Hispanic in origin, and half so. And so they set up a beautiful ofrenda on their front porch for their dad. And an ofrenda is basically kind of like an altar of sorts, where you put pictures of loved ones who have passed and little trinkets and mementos and memoriams for this person to kind of say, "Hey, you're still part of our life," and to honor them and remember them. And just like you do that, just like cultures do that on the Day of the Dead, you can also do that all throughout the year, but especially during the holidays. It's kind of nice. Some things that some family members do, especially if they've recently lost a loved one, is they will actually set at family dinners, they will set an extra place at the table for their loved ones. And just kind of as a memory of they're still here with us, even if they're not here physically, they can still be in our hearts. They can be here, you know, quote unquote, in spirit, right? Celebrate and cherish the good memories that you've had with these loved ones around the holidays, things of that nature. And that can be really cathartic and really helpful, especially for those of you who are going through grief or loss during these holiday seasons where these people have always been around and now they no longer are. So remember to do that. Don't shy away from it. That catharsis or that painful process of inviting those memories back in can be very healing for us and can actually help set us up emotionally for better mental, emotional, spiritual health in the long run. And it can help us to avoid destructive emotional, mental, and even physical behaviors as well. Quite often, if you're anything like me, those of you who are watching this, or Diane even right here, I love to eat my feelings. I love it. I eat all my feelings. I want to eat all of them. And if I don't unpack those feelings, if I don't actually take a minute to figure out why I'm feeling sad, why I'm feeling down, and deal with some of the things that are going on in my heart, I end up just giving in and eating all my feelings and start making really poor physical health choices. And that's not even to speak of the toll that undealt with mental and emotional health consequences can have. So, Diane, you want to add anything to all of that?
No, I think that's pretty good.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't have a whole lot else planned. That was kind of it. Again, find ways to kind of deal with the circadian rhythm issues that happen around this time of year when it's dark, whether that be going to bed earlier, wearing blue light, you know, blocking glasses, going to bed on time and being regimented, diligent, disciplined, wake up at a good time, at a regular time will help as well. Do different activities during the winter that may be reserved just for the winter, so it can be almost exciting when the dark comes, so that you can do these fun things you've been looking forward to doing. Reach outside to yourself, serve others. All of that. Now, I mentioned this to Diane already, but next week I'm actually inviting a large group outside of my normal coaching group to come join us. I actually lead the health and wellness committee at my company, Lendio. And in order to kind of consolidate and save some time and energy, and also to kind of produce a greater conversation, instead of having a physical after hours meeting, we're going to go ahead and do this after hours meeting via Zoom. And so it's going to take place at this meeting, but obviously Diane's invited and any of my other group coaching clients are invited, as well as pretty much everybody in my company. Now, the last time I did one of these, I tried to do it physically in person and over Zoom, and not a single soul showed up. So it could just be me and Diane again, or me, Diane, and Josh, or whoever else comes. We'll make the best of it, whatever happens, and we'll have a nice conversation about a lot of this stuff. A lot of it's going to be a repeat of what we've just discussed. I am going to be a little bit more high level topical and ask for more community or group engagement, and let kind of the conversation steer itself, and we'll see where it goes. But yeah, that's what we'll do next week.
Okay.
Well, thanks for joining in here. Diane, also don't be afraid right now. I've said this for the remainder of the year. Don't be afraid to share the links and stuff to friends and family. I'm not asking everybody to have to be members in order to jump into our Zoom meetings for the rest of 2023. So kind of like a intro, if you want to bring, you know, any of your family members or any of your neighbors or friends or people who have been interested, I'm going to start drumming up a little bit more interest outside as well, and just kind of throwing the Zoom link around for the rest of the year, for the month of December. And then in January, we'll tighten it back down again to people who are joined into the group coaching program officially. But that way we can kind of get some more people in here to chat with. Because while it's amazing to chat one-on-one with Diane, I think it would be really cool to have like 10 people in here, or 20 people, or 30 people in here. So try to grow those numbers, and just, you can just share that link out when I send it out. So,
okay.
All right. Thanks, okay. Diane. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the BTS Health and Fitness Group Coaching Call and this podcast episode. Hopefully you guys took some value out of it, and I'm hoping you can take some of these tips and tricks on with you to whatever challenges you might have. Today, we actually had the newest episode record where I met with Diane again, and we chatted about personal winters and personal struggles that we might be going through that create similar hurdles that the physical actual winters can put in our way. So yeah, that'll be coming out in about a month and a half, so hopefully you guys can tune in for that episode. But I'm really grateful that Diane continues to be a part of these group calls and these sessions with me. She's almost like my podcast co-host, so I appreciate you, Diane. Thank you so much for being a part of this. Yeah, hopefully you guys can take those, some nuggets of truth and wisdom out of all of this. Prepare yourselves for the different types of weather you might encounter. Explore with different movements and different exercises and activities that will help get you outside and moving and happy and healthy and all of that. So, yeah, thanks again for joining, and we'll catch you on the next episode.